It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, Freeview 277, and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely lovely Linda Cloke.
Thank you, Paul. Oh, you're so lovely. You make me feel great every time I come here.
Cool. I have to remember what adjective to use with you, because I can't have you the same as Jules, because that wouldn't be fair, would it? And
no.
And you're nicer than Jules.
Think
she's not listening. It's all right. She has tweeted, though.
Has she?
Yeah, because she's now well again.
Oh, that's good.
Well, it is, but it's also annoying.
Well, I'm sure she'll tell you all about the food that she's been eating.
Oh, I've had four tweets with pictures of food already this morning.
Yes,
yeah.
I can imagine. And yeah. All the other things that she's done to get better.
Yeah, yeah. Her list of medications.
Yeah,
her
patient.
List of herbal medications that have recovered her from the flu. I've had that list, yeah. She's saying, Vanillaware, but that's me, have a stonkingly great Business Bunker, love from Dubai, where I shop local. And she says, there's a very wet floor in the loo. Apposite of what, I do not know. That is just, there's a very wet floor in the loo.
It was very kind of her to tell you that, though, wasn't it?
Oversharing.
Yeah. Well, she is a bit of a loo aficionado. Yeah, she wherever she goes in the world, and she goes a lot of places, she sends me a picture of the loos. And my favourite one, I've got to remember which country, it was in Africa, and I think it was Botswana, or Namibia. She was in Namibia, and she showed me a picture of this loo, and she said, we were in the bush, and I needed the loo, and this is what I found. So I'm expecting a hole in the floor or whatever. It was actually a gold and marble bathroom. It was absolutely wonderful. And I said, that's absolutely wonderful. She said, but what you don't know is this. And she took a photograph from a different angle, and there was no back wall to the toilet. It went straight out into the bush. Yeah, really?
<It's>
yeah, exactly.
Was it plumbed in?
This was the strange thing, Simon. It was stonking. It was an absolutely fabulous bathroom. It was all marble and gilt and gold, and there were taps, and but there was no wall. Weird. Anyway, she sent me a nice picture. I have a picture of a toilet. Yeah, so she has a picture. She sent me a picture of the toilet, and I'm assuming that's a wet floor. I don't know why it's wet, but I'm sure we'll find out. Anyway.
I'm not entirely sure. I want to know.
No, exactly. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Got another one from her. Yeah, you were right, Linda.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks. The IV vitamins, the electrolytes have helped me. I had a better 5 days. And now I've got some other... Oh, no, I'm not going to read that. Oh, and she's practicing her Arabic.
Does she have some Arabic?
She speaks Arabic, yeah. She lived in Cairo. She was married to an Egyptian in one of her earlier marriages.
Because there's been one or two, haven't there?
There's been a few, yeah.
Yeah.
She's been working her way through the religions of the world, to be honest.
I don't think this is true. I'm
no, it is. It is. She was when she was 17, she was married to a Muslim Egyptian, and she lived in Cairo. And then she married a Christian, and then she married a Jewish man, yeah. And
has she done a Buddhist yet?
No, we're on a search for a Sikh and a Buddhist to complete the set. Yeah.
Okay,
I'll yeah.
have to let her know. Does her current husband know?
I think he's aware, but he's not really fussed about it, to be honest.
He's
thinking
he might be getting off light.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I've got a video of food now as well, so thank you for that, Jules. I don't know what it is.
It's great for the radio, isn't it?
Yeah. It looks like some kind of hummus. Oh, I don't know.
So I've got one here from Sarah Marsh Collins.
Yep.
Getting ready to listen to Business Bunker Show with Vanilla Webb and Linda Cloak. Here we go, Kent business. Goings on and business banter, random facts about Kent, places, names and cheesy tunage.
Well, I'm pleased Sarah can listen to us this week because she couldn't last week because she locked herself out of her car.
No.
So we actually know the listening habits of our listener.
Exactly. When you only have two listeners, you tend to know what they're up to. Yeah. Yeah.
It's handy.
Yeah, no, she locked herself out of her car accidentally. And of course, it was one of these electronic key jobs, and so she couldn't get back in. It was really weird. She did describe what had happened, but I said she tweeted earlier saying that she was going to listen today because she now did have access to her car.
Well, here's a random. We wanted random business facts. Mm. I have a physiotherapist because I've got a dodgy knee, and they have a Tesla 3 in the family, and it needed a software update. So she's waiting in for the Tesla guy to show up, who was due to come in before I showed up for my physio appointment. Mm-hmm. And she got a text from the bloke saying, been and done it. So he'd actually arrived, been able to unlock the car with his Tesla box of tricks, which makes you think, how easy are those to come by? Mm-hmm. Plugged into the car, run the software update, locked it up and gone, and never even had to interact. He's just driving around Kent doing Tesla 3s.
It's funny you should say that, Simon, because that's exactly one of the things that Sarah said. She tried everything to get into the car. She called the garage or the AA or someone. They rocked up and opened the car just like that. And she said it was really easy for them to open the car. And that's the worry, isn't it? It's one of the problems with all these electronic keys and all the rest of it. See, with my car, I can open it from my phone. And you think, well, that's really clever. And then you think, well, hold on a minute. If anybody gets into my phone or can interrupt the signal, they can open it too.
Here's a fun fact. With my car, I can drive it with my phone. I kid you not, it's actually designed that you push a couple of buttons on the app and it will reverse out of a tight garage.
Yeah, I've got
and
that.
And you've got to keep tapping it so that it comes out. So you and it won't go over at all, like 3 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But the car will move and steer remotely while you operate your phone. And
So here's one for you, lads. Do you prefer the old days where you used to have to use an old wire coat hanger to break into a car?
Yeah.
Or do you prefer the modern way where they just click a phone and can get in?
Well, I'll tell you what, when I used to do that, it was a bloody sight easier with a coat hanger. But I mean,
The trouble is, you're asking people of an age that could operate a coat hanger. we're not so good with software engineering. It's a good point, and I'm glad you asked it, because I was kind of ask a kind of similar question. One of the things I've just got a new car. It's a BMW. It's like the flight deck of the Starship Enterprise, and every time I go to do something the car goes, don't touch that.
Which one have you got?
It's just a M Sport, 5 M Sport.
Oh, very nice too.
It's a lovely car, and it's typical BMW, doesn't have indicators and all that.
Yeah.
stick your arm out.
Yeah.
No, precisely not.
But my question is kind of a supplementary question to Linda's. Personally, I think a lot of the electronics on cars have gone too far. Yeah. You know, you've got lane control. The car stops you doing things, you know. You try and pull out and it goes, no, you can't do that. You will try to park. It goes, leave it alone. You're part of this. And the problem is when it goes wrong, and you go...
It breaks for you.
Yeah, and the brakes come on and you just go, oh, for goodness sake, leave me alone.
I've got an E450.
Yeah.
The first time it happened to me, brakes come on, I was driving down Stone Street and there was a car signalling to turn right. It had started to move. In my judgment, I didn't need to adjust my speed. Mm. I could see it.
Mm.
I was right. I'm absolutely convinced. We're doing 50 miles an hour. Mm. At 50 miles an hour, the brakes suddenly went into emergency stop mode without my foot leaving the accelerator because the car thought the stationary object ahead and decided it knew better than I did.
Mm.
And I realised what it was as soon as it happened. I'd never really thought about the feature before, but it beeped at me a couple of times since when it thought something was going to happen. And poor wife nearly jumped out of her skin.
Which, the beeping drives me nuttier than anything else. Mm. I mean, we're in the UK. They build supermarket car parks for small 1960s minis. They don't build them for anything else. So when you're trying to park in a parking space, it's always now, and the car goes, which is just distracting.
Well, yeah. You have got an override button to turn the parking centres off.
Yeah, you do that, and you get a letter from BMW.
You find the button.
Yeah, it's nested in a menu somewhere 14 deep.
There's actually a specific button on mine that turns it off.
Okay, now you have to go into the menus. And again, that's not, while I'm having a rant about this, this is another thing, you know, while you're driving along, you end up looking at the screen more than you are the road. You're going, well, hold on, how do I do that? How do I get the radio on? How can I turn this off? How can I turn that on? It's blooming cold in here. Where's the heater?
Have you got voice control on your...
I have.
Does it understand you?
No. I set it up for Cockney. It's not a problem. Yeah. Yeah. But this is what it did to me. Yeah. And the voice control in the Merc I had before, it was appalling. Yeah. You'd say something and it some German woman would take you to Berlin and you go, no, I asked you to put Radio 2 on. And you're taking me to Berlin. What are you talking about? The BMW one's a lot better. But I did it the other day. Yeah. I push voice control and I go, Navigate 2. And it goes, we can't do that because you've got a phone in the car. I beg your pardon? You've got an iPhone in the car. iPhone overrides the Navigate.
How bizarre.
I go, weird. I ring the garage and I go, you've got Apple Play. Yeah. Well, that means you have to use the maps on your phone. So why have I got a $3,000... sat nav if it's going to use my phone? Oh, you can disable it. How'd you do that? Right. You probably want to write this down.
Go through the menus. Yeah. Or just turn off Bluetooth and then it wouldn't know that you had a phone.
Yeah, exactly. And then someone tries to ring me and it doesn't work. You know, this is the problem. This is my entire problem now, that it's cars are far too complicated for what they are.
I like voice control, and in my Merc it works quite well, right. But I have a couple of interesting ones. So my office is called Talis IFA, Independent Financial Advisors, but I haven't got full stops after the I, the F and the A. So if I say dial Talis IFA, it goes no contact listed.
You need IFA.
If I go dial Talis IFA, it goes dialing Talis IFA, and it rings it.
Yeah.
My daughter is called Sian. S-I circumflex, although there's no circumflex in the phone, so I can't do it. S-I circumflex A-N. Dial Sian Webster. There is no listing. Dial Cyan Webster. Dialing mobile number. It's actually classic. What it understands, it's very literal.
Yeah, exactly.
First world problems.
What we've discovered is we need to then have a whole new language just to be able to use all this tech in our cars.
Yeah, we need to speak car, don't we?
All we need is a translator.
Yeah.
But actually, I've got a wife, so of course I don't need anything else because my wife tells me absolutely everything, including the stuff I didn't think I needed to know. we're driving home, you know, I've gone many times before. Oh, you should turn here. 5 minutes from home. Yeah, never mind. You're listening.
No comment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there we go. One quick question, further question, because you're a motorcyclist.
I am a motorcyclist,
and you have a lovely motorcycle.
I have a Honda Pan European ST 1300.
He does indeed. Are motorbikes getting as bad?
In terms of what they tell you to do?
Yeah, well, electronics and all that.
Yes, they are. I mean, my bike is actually 6 years old. It's only done 25,000 miles, so it's still, you know, relatively young in motorcycle terms. The electronics seem to get more and more advanced on bikes as the years go past.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, motorcyclists buy their own separate sat-nav. So I've got a separate sat-nav, and I've got a Bluetooth headset in my crash helmet that connects to my phone and indeed to the sat-nav, so I can get audible sat-nav directions if I want them. Right. Interesting, trying to get my headset to talk to two different things at once is very, very complicated.
So right. Has your wife got a headset in her helmet so she can give you directions?
My wife won't get on the back of my motorcycle.
It's why he's got a motorcycle.
No, I was very lucky last year. I went to France and Belgium on a war games tour on a motorcycle with 20 police advanced motorcyclists, because my next door but one neighbour was a policeman.
Right.
And I got taught how to ride my bike properly, and it was actually quite fun. They were so nice. They were so nice. We're going again in September. It's such a great time.
Well, you see, I had motorbikes when I was a kid, and allegedly a young adult. And but I had them in the days where I was buying motorbikes from the 1950s, second-hand ones.
Yeah.
You know, and I had two-stripe motorcycles and stuff like that.
Bantam.
I had a Bantam.
You had a BSA Bantam.
I had a BSA Bantam.
125 or 175?
I had the 125, and it was an ex-army BSA Bantam. And I drove it for a year without a clutch, because the clutch cable had snapped and I couldn't afford a new one. So I'd just smash it into gear and it would go.
Yeah.
You know, really simple, easy.
I got a White Ridge Ford Escort back from Southampton with no clutch, with only 30,000 miles on the clock. I needed some people to push start me to get me going so I could get it into first when we started to move. Mm. And then I got all the way back, and I think I had to stop once, and the people that were riding shotgun had to just give me a push start. But I did the whole thing with no clutch. It was about whatever Southampton to Hayes was, around 100-odd miles.
Right.
I was very proud
of myself. Once you get going, you see, it's when they started introducing synchromesh gearboxes and all that kind of stuff. That just messes it all up. You want something nice and simple and easy.
The Escort had synchro. That was all right.
Yeah.
Sounds like you all need to go out and buy classic cars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a nice one. I mean, the interesting thing is E-Type Jags were the flavour of the month.
Oh, yeah.
But they've all come down in price recently. Mm-hmm. But the other one that's interesting, of course, is the price of Teslas. Teslas. Anybody who bought a Tesla last year is extremely hacked off this year because they've all dropped their prices by 20%.
Yeah. But one of the other benefits of having classic cars, of course, is you're not into ULEZ and congestion charges and all that, because they don't charge classic cars for them.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I drove to see my son in Chigwell. Chigwell?
In Essex,
North London, near the Thames.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, only about the second or third time I've been to see his new house since he moved, and I got a ticket 2 weeks later for driving down a road where there was one sign that said no cars, or lorries. And I'm thinking, well, I'm just driving. I'm going to go down there 50 yards and turn right into my son's road. How else am I going to get there?
Yeah.
So I carried on. I've got a fine for £75, which I've appealed. It'll be very interesting to see what happens.
My youngest son lives in Hackney. He doesn't have a car in London because it's not worth it. His car's at his mum's house. But if he did, if he turns left out of his house, it's £12. If he turns right, it isn't.
Yeah.
It's just crazy stuff where we are now. I've had a tweet from Life As Planned, and they say, we'd love a shout-out for our Festability, and that's a Twitter handle as well, Festability, a live music, accessible music festival in Kent. We're looking for potential sponsors and volunteers to help us out. It's a 27-acre field in a big site, and it's to cover for three middle-aged mums. Hold on, you've lost me there. You've got a field to cover for three middle-aged mums. And I don't think they mean that, do they? I think they mean the volunteers are to cover for three middle-aged mums, but the event's in a 27-acre field, I guess.
Michael Parks may have retweeted
it. Is it a music event?
It's a festival. And if you've their Twitter handle is Festability. So if you're interested in that for any reason, whether you're interested in middle-aged mums, 27-acre fields, or music, or volunteering, give Festability a cover.
They'll be inundated with people now.
Yeah, exactly.
Who doesn't love a middle-aged mum?
Yeah. I have no idea what that had to do with the price of bread, but there you go. It made it interesting. So
Michael Park Surveyors have said, we'd love a good old shout-out from us to all of you good folk.
Thank you so much. That's Michael Park Surveyors. They're commercial property specialists based on the Medway City Estate in Rochester, covering the southeast of England.
And Paul did that for me. He said, is there anybody you don't know?
One or two people sneaking under my radar, but
I try to get around.
I'm a great one for researching everything, you see, when people tell me things. It's I won't name them because that would not be fair. But there was an article in KM Online this week about a new company that was a multi-million pound company doing this, that and the other. I've never heard of them. So I go and check multi-million when their last accounts had a turnover of £145,000. Don't think so.
That's rapid growth for you, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the standard of journalism you get these days.
I was once threatened to be sued by a software developer who hadn't done the job I'd specified in writing and then sent me a large bill for the thing he hadn't done. And I refused to pay it. And he said he was going to sue me. And I said, well, fair enough. We'll argue the case in court. I've got the email trail here. And I looked him up and his balance sheet was minus £300,000. And I thought, No wonder you're not getting any work done. That's a position of yours. A little bit of research can be very powerful.
Exactly. So, you know, I like to look things up and I like to know who I'm dealing with or what's going on around and about the place. And, sometimes there's some kind of fibbers about, but there you go.
We also heard from Thackeray Williams. They've got the new networking property drinks on Thursday, 9th of March at 6 p.m. at the premises in London Road, Bromley.
Fantastic. So when's that again, Linda?
That's on Thursday, the 9th of March at 6 p.m. And that's at London Road, Bromley, at Thackeray Williams.
Cool.
Property drinks.
Right, here we go. We're going to go with Cheesy Tunage.
Oh, great.
And then when this is finished, Simon, we're going to do a couple of adverts and then we're going to talk to you.
Oh, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Now, you've been on this show quite a long time. For those that don't know, and there can't be anyone out there that doesn't know, but maybe you don't know, Simon used to do a regular show on the station as well.
I did. On
financial things as the Money Talk guru. And he is our go-to man on all things financial. And because he's been on the show quite a few times, I've played most of his cheesy tunage. But I don't think I've done this one before, but maybe.
We'll find out.
Abba,
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, 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 always sunny in a rich man's world. Oh, 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 oh. All the things I could do if I had a little money, it's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.
It's hard to find, but I can't get him off my mind.
Ain't it sad?
And if he happens to be free, I bet he wouldn't fancy me.
That's too bad.
So I must leave, I have to go to Las Vegas, I'm on the go, and win a fortune in a game. My life will never be the same.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
Construction businesses, we're celebrating the very best projects, people, innovations and businesses in construction. Could this be you? Winning an award can help you open doors to contracts, find new supply channels and break into new markets. Each winner will receive a beautifully engraved trophy along with a total prize package worth over £1,000. Enter the Southeast Construction Awards now at constructionexpoawards.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Hey, money, money, money.
Indeed.
Yeah, that wasn't the ABBA version, that was the Mamma Mia version, but I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was lovely.
Yeah. So, listen, it's a pleasure to welcome back onto the show Mr. Simon Webster, known as the Money Talk Guru. Simon is from Talis IFA, or IFI. As we're supposed to talk now, is it IFA?
Well, IFA, according to my
your car.
Control on
yeah.
my car, yeah.
But it's Talis IFA.
Independent Financial Advisors.
Absolutely.
Yes. Very smooth.
So, Simon, welcome back onto the show. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you're a mine of information, and we want to talk to you about all things financial at the moment. So, before we do, though, just do a little bit of an advert for Talis IFA. Tell us about what you do and who you do it for.
Well, we are independent financial advisors. We're based in Ashford. We've got advisors. We've got over 20 advisors now all over the south of England. Our head office is in Ashford in Kent, just around the corner. We've been going as a business for about 30 years, and we advise a whole range of people, from people just buying their first home to people trying to sort out their inheritance tax at the other end, and lots of people in the middle. We advise businesses, we advise private individuals, we advise trusts and trustees. If it's money and it moves, we do it or know somebody who does it.
And you do my pension for me?
Well, it's very kind of you to say so. It wasn't my place to say, but yes, I've looked after your pension for a few years and it's moved gradually in the right direction, so that's what we like to see.
Yeah, exactly.
We do our best. Thank you very much.
And you're very good at it too, yeah. Simon. You're very good at it too. So let's kick off. You were saying that you wanted to talk about some of the issues that are coming up with...
Well, for historic reasons, which I won't go into, the tax year in the United Kingdom ends on the memorable date of the 5th of April every year. Mm. It's a spectacular date to choose. It's, you know, right in the middle of nothing, apropos of absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Practical purposes, it's 31st of March, but it's actually the 5th of April. And so the run-up to that time is generally referred to in the office as silly season, where everybody suddenly goes, I knew I was supposed to do something this tax year. I must put some money in my ISA.
Right.
And we end up with all these checks for 20,000 quid wandering into the offices, people lob it in, or people doing, I must put some money in my pension before the tax year again. And, of course, those are sort of the first two things that people should be thinking about, because they're use-it-or-lose-it reliefs. If you don't put your ISA contribution in this tax year, you can do 20,000 next tax year, but you've missed your chance with this year.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. These two things have never been more important than they are right now. Now, you would probably say, yeah, you would say that because you want to sell financial advice. Mm-hmm. But actually, the Chancellor's making it really easy for me because they are changing capital gains tax.
Right.
Big time. At the moment, you can make a £12,300, nice round figure again, boys and girls.
How they pick some of these things is bizarre, isn't it?
Gain when you sell something and pay no tax.
Yeah.
If you're a husband and wife, you can apportion the gain between you and you can make a £24,600 gain on a bit of kit when you sell it and you pay no tax. As of the 6th of April, if you dispose of something on the 6th of April or afterwards, you only get £6,000 tax-free.
Right.
Now, bearing in mind capital corporation tax is going to be charged on property at 28% if you're a higher rate taxpayer, that's an awful lot of money. Now, it does go as low as 10% for basic rate taxpayers on non-property assets, but hey, why spend tax if you don't have to? Mm. So you really want to be looking at any assets you hold. If you're trying to sell a house, get it completed by midnight on the 5th of April. If it's a second property, because otherwise you're going to get a bigger tax bill. If you've got any investments sitting in a collective investment, which is sort of like the standard thing that people hold with banks and building societies, we see this a lot, Banks and building societies don't usually manage capital gain tax as part of their offering. They charge the same as we do, and they don't deliver half the service. Part of our proposition is that we manage clients' capital gains tax. In fact, I was talking to our advisor support manager only this morning, and she was just tearing her hair out. We are doing so many capital gains tax calculations for our clients at the moment and selling investments off to buy them back 30 days later, because you've got to, you can't do bed and breakfast anymore. You've got to leave 31 days between the purchase and the sale, otherwise it doesn't count anymore. But that's a technical bit. But sell the investments now, buy them back a bit later, and then you rebase their value for future gains. And it's a really important tax technique. It's very hard to explain on the radio. Believe me, it works.
Yeah.
So if you've got investments with a bank or building society and you haven't managed their tax, call an independent financial advisor. You could even call Talis. We're in the book and on the internet, talisifa.com. And we will gladly help you with that. But it's a big, 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 big deal.
Sure.
And it's even bigger from the 6th of April 2024, because the 12,300 allowance that drops to £6,000 on the 6th of April 23 drops to £3,000. I've got three fingers up, Red Deer Listener.
Yeah, yeah. I've got two fingers
from
up.
From the 6th of April.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going that low yet that we know about.
No, but mine's just to the government.
Yeah. It goes down to £3,000 from the 6th of April 2024. And that's a massive, massive, massive increase in tax.
Mm.
Now, to be fair, the vast majority of the people don't pay capital gains tax. Only about 5% of the population pay capital gains tax. But actually, the tax take from CGT is projected to increase significantly as a result of these changes. So if you sell something without taking proper advice before you do it, you could be causing yourself a massive, massive problem. Take independent financial advice. Talk to your accountant if you've got one. Talk to somebody. Do the sums. But bear in mind, you've only effectively got a month to sort it out before you get a bigger tax bill.
Yeah.
So that's the first big thing to
talk
about.
Really good advice. Thank you, Simon. And anybody in that situation really needs to get, you know, you've got a couple of weeks to get this organised, so get onto it. I just want to make the point, I don't want to start an argument about this, but of course, the government are still going mad with taxes and price rises and all kinds of things. But if you actually look, most of this is counterproductive. The actual revenue income of the government is falling. As almost as fast as they put up taxes.
Well, that flies in the face of the facts, Mr. Andrews. Sorry to disagree with you publicly and on air.
But no, you can go for
it. January tax receipts were the highest on record ever.
Yeah, sure.
Full stop.
Yep. But they are going down in terms of a proportion of what they should be earning.
That's a debate we could have another day. I'd like to have statistics. I'd like to have statistics in front of me.
Yeah.
But I mean, the other one that's the big thing they are doing is they've frozen allowances, so nobody's noticed yet. Mm. But it bites from the 6th of April.
Yep.
So your personal allowance for income tax, £12,570 in the current tax year. You'd normally expect that to go up with inflation.
Mm.
It won't. It's frozen at £12,570. Mm. That means if you get a pay rise next year, then you'll pay more of your income in tax because you've got no corresponding personal allowance. It doesn't matter what level you're in, you pay more tax.
Mm.
And it's worse if you're a higher rate taxpayer, because the 40% tax bracket, which is currently £50,271, only in England can they come up with these nice round figures to make it easy to remember. I had to write it down. But again, that's frozen. Mm. So if you get a pay rise over £50,271, you're going to pay more tax at 40% because the personal allowance hasn't pushed up. And if you've had a pay rise over that, you'll pay a higher proportion of your income at 40%. Now, I'm now going to ask my trick question and see if anybody in the room knows the answer. What is the highest rate of income tax in the UK at the moment?
As a percentage?
Yeah.
It's about 65, isn't it?
Well, it's 60, and you're right, Mr. Andrews, near as much. So most people think it's 45 because the 45% tax rate pulled in at £150,000 in this tax year.
Mm.
Next tax year, it drops to £125,140. So if you're lucky enough to be making six figures, that's quite a big thing as well. But there's actually a little margin on income between £100,000 and £125,000 where, due to the magic of the maths, you lose personal allowance. So you've got £12,570 of personal allowance. You actually lose £2 of allowance for each £1 of allowance for each £2 of income between £100,000 and £125,000. The effective rate of tax on that slice of income is 60%. 60%. And that's a hell of a lot of tax.
I was reading, I might get this slightly wrong because I'm just trying to drag it out of my memory. There's a chap called Dan Nidell, who's a tax lawyer. He's the one that uncovered our former Chancellor's shenanigans with his Gibraltar company.
All right.
Yeah. And Dan was saying, he was talking about this cliff face thing that we just talked about, 60%. He said there's actually a worse one than that, but people don't understand this. And it's the if you're on universal credit and you move into employment, there's a marginal tax rate of 72%. But he said, you know, most people don't see that because it's on benefits. Mm. There's some crazy stuff. It's like VAT. Yeah. There's a cliff age at 85,000, which is when VAT cuts in. And there are hundreds of thousands of small businesses that never earn more than that because they don't want to start messing about with VAT.
No. Well, they want to start messing with VAT or increasing their prices by 20% to consumer customers.
Yeah.
Which is why there's an awful lot of this cash floating about in certain businesses.
Absolutely.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Let's hope it stays that way.
We should have to wait and see. So, the income tax planning, moving your income, if you're lucky enough to be in this sort of rarefied atmosphere of six-figure income, bringing your income forward, declaring a bonus or a dividend now is a good idea, because that's the other thing that's happening. There was a tax-free allowance for dividends and savings, and they're being cut next year as well.
Mm.
So if you're a saver or you get dividend income, you're going to pay more tax in the next tax year than you do at the moment.
I can't remember. At the moment, dividends, you get £2,000 tax-free, don't you?
Yes.
That's due to change, isn't it?
That's going down. That's going down as well.
Yeah.
And the savings allowance as well.
Yeah.
So if you get dividend income or you get savings income, you're being trimmed. Mm. So declare, if you're in business, declare an interim interim dividend before the 5th of April, because then it's taxed at the 5th of April rates.
Right.
So that's another basic bit of tax planning. Interestingly, and I won't name and shame, I as it happens, I have a meeting with my accountant next week, so he'll probably tell me face to face, but I haven't had a note from my accountant telling me to do that.
Right.
And anybody who's in business with their own company should seriously look at declaring a dividend. You can run it through your director's current account. That will make sense to anybody who's got a business. And that will be some small help. But, it's a big deal. So there's a lot of extra tax going to be paid next year. Now, you know, I don't like paying tax as much as the next man, but they got to claw back all this money they threw into the economy because of COVID from somewhere. And I think it's probably right that those with the capacity to afford it should probably pay. Mm. And that's people with income from capital and dividends are usually, if not always, the ones that can do it. So it's a broad brush.
Going back to what I said earlier, one of the problems here is, though, with the perfect storm of everything else that's going on, with high energy prices and all the other stuff, what's actually happening is, though, we're losing lots of businesses that actually would have paid some tax, now aren't going to pay anything because they're not making a profit any longer. Mm. There's something that's affected me in my business for the 24 years I've been in business. We've paid corporation tax every year. We ain't paying it this year.
No.
Ain't happening.
Well, I mean, your business, along with hospitality, hotels, travel, some resale, all been horribly hit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's slightly unfortunate for you that you've got two businesses here that have not really been impacted by COVID. Financial services, we carried on trading, and the funeral business has have carried on dying.
Exactly. And that's great. You know, I mean, it's fantastic that businesses have, and there are some businesses that have thrived through one reason or another, which is brilliant. The problem is all those thousands of businesses that haven't and have been hit, and it was going to come home to roost eventually as their income levels go below profit, so they won't be paying corporation tax, they won't be paying these other
bits and pieces. Maybe when people come up with ideas now, they'll be coming up with recession-proof businesses. I was talking to someone about it this morning.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he runs a drainage business, and that's recession-proof.
I don't want to be banging drum or saying, aren't we terribly clever too much, but I'm banging the drum and saying we're
clever
during recession. Because it's interesting, my business partner James and I I came back from holiday the day we went into lockdown.
Right.
I got off a cruise ship from somewhere nice, came into the office and the staff are saying, so when are you sending us home? And I said, well, I heard about this virus somewhere, but I mean, it was on another cruise ship somewhere else. What's the problem? And they're all saying, no, we're all going home. The government shut. And it took me a couple of hours to get my head in the game and realise this really was a thing because I was in full on holiday mode. Yeah. And what we did was we got them all to tuck their office computers under their arm. Never mind buying laptops. Just pick up your perishing desktop and put it in your back seat, take it home and plug it into your internet at home. Mm. And because all our tech works across the internet, that was great. Our only problem was phones, which we then upgraded to IP phones, and we were able to get that done within a couple of months. And thanks to the good offices of the lovely Susan, if you're listening, Susan, we still love you a lot, and James and I, the three of us, came into the office every day, financial services exemption, and we kept the business going, and we were dealing with our advisors from home. Mm. But the interesting thing is, a number of our competitors decided it was too difficult to go to work. So they closed the door, and they didn't work. I mean, they were dealing with emergencies. Mm. We tried to maintain normal service, and that was a real advantage to us during lockdown because recruitment agencies were trying to place financial advisors, and there was nobody open. Mm. So they found out that we were open, and we were being offered financial advisors after financial advisors.
Those that don't know, was actually a really difficult thing to find before.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very difficult to find, you know, and other firms were prepared to throw lots of money at recruitment agencies to get people in, and we're a bit tight. Mm. We don't like paying lots of money to recruitment agencies. Sorry if you're a recruitment agency listening. But we negotiated a fair price, and we paid fairly. But we went into lockdown with 20 people, and we came out with over 30 people. Mm. And the reason that we were able to do that, and we made a profit on that, and the reason we were able to do that is we took a conscious decision in difficult economic circumstances that we were going to find a way of making the business work. Mm. Now, if you're a pub and you're not allowed to open, if you're a hotel and you've got to close, you don't get a vote.
Yeah. Mm.
But and, you know, if you've got a recruitment business and there's nobody hiring, you don't get a vote. Mm. But if you're in a business where you could make some sensible adjustments and you could just adjust your attitude and you could show up at work, even if it's harder than it was or different, we interviewed all our interviews on Microsoft Teams, Zoom.
Yeah.
We hired five advisors that we never met face to face. We did it all on. We got the professional qualifications. We took the references. We did all the stuff that we needed to do to check out their bona fides. You know, we met people face to face after lockdown at team meetings, and we discovered they had legs and trousers. Mm. But we didn't know that until then. Yeah. But we just made the decision that because it was difficult, we were going to find a way, and we did.
And that's fantastic. You know, in my business, we made a similar decision, but it didn't work. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't get lucky.
Exactly. We kept people on, but it, as you said, you know, the rest of the industry, industry were going, well, you know, we don't need to recruit anyone because everyone's working at home and getting paid by the government. So it did for us, but, you know, it's one of those things. Okay. So
there's some more tax planning things to come into if we've still got time.
Go for it. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mentioned a couple of other things. Yeah. So we were talking about tax rates. National insurance has been frozen as well. So same thing applies to national insurance. IHT allowance has been frozen. Hmm. So effectively, if you're worth over £1 million as a married couple when you're dead, to be in that bracket. You know, if you're lucky enough to be in that bracket, 40% of everything you pass on to your next of kin after £1 million is taken by the government. So if you die worth £2 million, then £400,000 goes to the government. Mm. Now, Roy Jenkins once described inheritance tax as a voluntary levy paid by those who distrust their heirs more than they dislike the inland revenue. It's a lovely saying, and it's not quite as true as it was now when Roy Jenkins said it, because they've tightened the rules up a bit. Mm. But there is plenty of tax planning that you can do, perfectly safe, perfectly legitimate. You will not find yourself on the front pages of the papers having ripped somebody off. Mm. Perfectly legitimate tax reliefs that the government encourages you to use. You only need to put money into these types of investments for 2 years, and they're totally outside your estate for inheritance tax purposes. There's all sorts of areas that you can deal with that's worth taking advice on. Until the 31st of March, no first-time buyer stamp duty up to £435,000. Get your purchase completed by the 31st of March and keep the stamp duty down. That's a good one. It was mentioned earlier, this is your last chance to buy back a large chunk of state pension by paying Class 2 and Class 3 national insurance costs. Lots of gobbledygook. Mm. In order to get a full state pension, you need a largely full national insurance track record. Not everybody has one. If you're not sure, go online, Google state pension forecast, put some personal information into the government website, and they'll tell you what your national insurance history is and what state pension you'll get and when you'll get it. Paul's nodding because he used to do it.
I'll tell you a story about that in a minute.
Well, the key point is, until the 5th of April this year, you can buy back state pension up to 2006. From the 6th of April, you can only buy back 6 years previous,
right,
which is a lot later than 2006. Now, to buy back state pension to 2006 would cost you quite a lot of money. But if you do the maths, it will be the best and most profitable investment you will ever make in your life. So if you've not looked at this, check out your state pension history on the government state pension forecasting website and pay a lump sum to the government, and you will then get a bigger state pension increasing every year in line with inflation, just as yours has just gone up, Paul.
It is. Yeah. I've just had
a pay rise.
I've just had a pay rise. Well, it's due to come in April. Yeah.
So just about to get a pay rise. You've been notified of it. Yeah. And you'll get that every year for the rest of your life. Mm. And Albert Einstein described compound interest as the most powerful force in the universe. Yeah. And it really makes a huge, huge, huge difference. Yeah. Last one, and this is just a sort of planning point that's got nothing to do with the end of the tax year, but it's worth putting in. If you earn over $50,000 a year, then you don't get your child benefit anymore. It's one of those little tax-saving measures that sort of crept in under the radar a few years ago.
Yeah.
But one of the little-known impacts of that is that lots of people just stopped claiming child benefit because they only had to give it back.
Yeah.
Which would be a perfectly logical thing to do. What people don't realise when they do that is the people that were entitled to claim state pension credits based on the fact that they were in receipt of child benefit lost that right. So what you've actually got to do, if you earn over $50,000 a year, is claim the child benefit, give it back, and get the state pension credit. It's a really important little wrinkle in the system. You can't tick a box. You've actually got to opt in and effectively give it back. It's a right old paper chase. Only the UK government can make it so blooming complicated. Mm. But do it, because the state pension is now worth north of 10 grand as a minimum.
Mm.
And that's big money. Mm. Because you're going to get the state pension probably for 20 years these days. If you retire at 67, 68, you're probably going to live to 85, 86, 87. That's the national average stats. So 10 grand a year today, indexed at 3, 4, 5% going through the next 20 years is a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
So missing out on a chunk of that, really, really expensive. So, you know, again, I'm not selling you a financial service here. I'm not selling you a product. I'm saying go and give the government some money or at least tick a box and make sure that you credit that, because if you don't, you'll regret it for a long time.
I smiled because
I like making you smile.
I used the government pension calculator, and when I filled it in, it said, "When did you start work?" And it kept going, "Error, error."
Oh, because it didn't go back to 1874.
Because it didn't go back as far as I started work. Well, no, what they were saying is, no, you can't have done, because you're at the time I was 67. And they said you can't have done then because you would have been too young. Sorry, I did, and I rang them eventually, and I said your calculator doesn't work. I started work in June 1970, and they went, that means you were 14. Yeah, and I paid national insurance because you took it off me. Yeah, and I was 15 in the August. Right, okay, no, sorry. Yeah, no, you're fine.
We'll have to change the programme.
Yeah, it's just one of those funny anomalies that of computer calculators. But luckily for me, I have a history of having paid. Even when I was unemployed, I bought stamps.
Yeah.
Back in the days when you had everybody...
Self-employed stamp.
Yeah. No, not just self-employed. I mean, you actually physically bought a stamp.
Oh.
Yeah, an employment stamp when in my day.
I keep forgetting you've been alive so much longer than
Most other people. You used to have a card with stamps on.
Oh, yeah. At one point. Shield.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was made redundant from the paper mill due to the miners being on strike, demanding a 43% pay rise, they got us all stacked.
God bless Mr. Scargill.
Yeah, 1972. So but I carried on. You know, my dad said to me, "Don't you stop. You need a full record, otherwise you won't get your pension." And he was quite right. So I bought my stamps even when I was unemployed.
I think a lot of youngsters these days probably don't realise that they're not paying their stamp and how important it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and then when it comes to it, as Simon said, you just won't get as much in terms of your pension.
Well, I was talking to a lady who came to our house for lunch on Sunday, and she was saying that she'd had a couple of kids and she worked in the NHS, but she'd only had a pension for 10 years. She was now 50-ish or whatever, and she was saying, I think I've left it too late to put any money in a pension, at which point I went, as Tesco nicked the phrase, but every little helps. And the point is that when you put £1,000 in a pension, and as a basic rate taxpayer, the government gives you £250 in addition in that pension straight away if you're a basic rate taxpayer, and £667 if you're a higher rate taxpayer. Day one, you'd be daft not to. Where else can you get a 25% or even a 66.7% increase in your investment returns for free, guaranteed? I mean, it's insane. Even if you took it out again the next day, because if you're over 55, you could take it out the next day, you're better off running the money through a pension plan and putting it in and taking it out again. You make money on the turn, as they say. Never mind investment returns.
Cool. Can I ask you one question?
You can ask. I don't know if I know the answer.
You know that the government some time ago introduced workplace pensions?
Yes.
Yeah, and most of us quite sensibly opted into that because that was a clever thing to do.
Well, you didn't. To be fair, most of you didn't opt out because it wasn't an option. You were put in. Yeah. It was you didn't opt out.
Opt out, yeah, absolutely.
So I'm being pedantic, but it's actually quite...
No, it's a very good point. My other question, though, as you full well know, Simon, because you run mine, is I have my own pension plan that you kindly look after. Is it possible to have your workplace pension moved into another pension? Can you consolidate your pensions?
Yes.
Is what I'm asking.
It's a large chunk of our business, as it happens these days, pension consolidation.
Right.
I'm looking at a tabletop in the radio studio, and I'm imagining it like the rules that you're allowed to have as a pension company. This is what you're allowed to do. Most pension providers, particularly older type pension providers, only operate on a third of the tabletop.
Right.
So, for example, the full flexi access drawdown, which is a sort of must-have feature for just about anybody retiring now that George Osborne introduced in 2014, 2015. A lot of the old-style pensions with companies like Phoenix and Refuge are the two big consolidators of old books. They've made the decision it's cheaper to wave goodbye to money as people transfer than it is to rewrite all their computer software to facilitate flexi access drawdown. So we're getting, you know, we're literally taking millions, the financial advisor community is literally taking millions from platforms like that and putting it into a modern flexi access contract. So it's absolutely worth transferring that money from Plan One into a new flexi access drawdown contract. I mean, there's several advantages. One, you've got a centralised investment proposition, you know what's going on. Two, you've only got one place to look when you want to know how much pension money you've got.
Yep.
Three, you're saving the planet in terms of how many bits of paper you get coming through the door and trying to administer it all and sort it all out. Four, you can be very, very clear about who you want to get the money if you drop dead before it's all gone. Because the key point, and this is the big point that people are just trying to get their head around in the pensions area, is when you started work, you went to work, you drew a salary, you paid into a pension, you got to 65, you retired. They gave you a gold watch and an income for life, and that was it. That was the choice. That was it. Now, for lots of people, retirement is a journey, not a destination. They retire in phases over a period of time, and they want their pension income to go with them. But the other big issue is pensions are separate to your estate. Remember, we talked about inheritance tax being worth over £1 million, you pay 40% tax. The pension doesn't count. So if you've got £1 million estate and £1 million pension plan the day you die, zero inheritance tax. So if you've got £1 million house and £500,000 in cash, what you want to do is pay the £500,000 out in cash as your living expenses, because you're effectively getting a 40% IHT discount when you pass it to your kids. So you actually leave your £1 million house and your £1 million pension, you leave £2 million to your children. If you spend your pension, then you've got £1 million house, £500,000 worth of cash, less 40% tax. That's £200,000 tax you paid you didn't need to. And just with a little bit of basic planning, it's what we call planning 101, and most people just go, I don't get this. But eventually, when you look at it long enough and work it through, it makes absolute sense. So we're seeing more and more clients using their pension plans as a tax-free inheritance vehicle to pass down the generations to their kids, rather than as a means of paying for their retirement. Now, sure. Lots and lots and lots of people have no choice. They've got a state pension and they need to eat their pensions. That's absolutely fine. That's what they're there for. And you've always got that option.
When, just a very quick question, because we can go on forever like this.
But, I'm but very good at going on forever.
No, we're almost at the time for the news. If you start to draw down your pension and then snuff it, does the same thing still count?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Two or three caveats. If you are in flexi income drawdown, which in my view is the preferred way of doing it, it's not right for everybody because there's some investment risk attached, and an annuity, which is another option, gives you a guaranteed income for life.
Yeah.
So if you do snuff it early, the insurance company keeps the money as a windfall profit.
Yeah.
Now, you can get some guaranteed annuities that pay out for 5 years or 10 years as a minimum. So you die a year after you retire. The income is still paid for your estate for 5 or 10 years. That's a 5 or 10 year guarantee. And some guarantees you can get longer. But effectively, those options are there. But if you take FlexiAccess drawdown, die before the age of 75, the whole fund goes as a check, as a lump sum, to your nominated beneficiary, presumably your spouse or your children or whoever.
Yeah.
Now, you can give them to a cash or you can give it to them as a pension. It depends on the situation as to which one's preferable and how the expression of wishes has been drafted. So make sure you get that one right. Take professional advice. I wonder if I know anybody that can help you with that. Mm-hmm. If you die after 75, then the money passes tax-free at your age 75, so it then ends up in a pension for your children at their age 70. When they draw that money that you've died after 75 when you passed it over, they pay income tax when they take it, which is what you would have had to do if you'd have drawn it. So it's pretty fair, but there's no inheritance tax. But the key thing is that the fund is preserved. Right. So that's the key bit.
And they benefit from the compound interest.
And they benefit from the compound interest, absolutely.
See, she was paying attention.
Tax-free compound interest, because the magic things with pensions is you get tax relief on the way in, which I mentioned. You get tax-free growth, same as an ISA. Mm. And then you can take a quarter of the fund, 25% out, as tax-free cash on retirement. Or, if you take FlexiAccess drawdown, you can take it out in little stages over time as effectively tax-free income. Mm. And again, so you can play the game depending on what your tax situation is. That's why it's called FlexiAccess. And again, people don't understand that this flexibility is tremendous. You need to be in the happy position of being able to needing to flex your income. A lot of us, the vast majority of people, just say, I need £2,000 a month or £1,000 a month to live on, and without that £1,000, I've got to come to my pension, I don't get a choice.
Yeah.
Well, then you just take it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're in that privileged position of being able to say, well, I've got some state pension, I've got some savings, I've got some consultancy income, I don't need my pension yet, then you can flex what you take from that, and that becomes really, really powerful.
Yeah. Simon, as always, fantastic mine of information. A bit mind-boggling for most of us, you know. We're all scribbling notes, going, "All right, on, yeah, yeah." But you know, I mean, the message is: talk to a specialist, basically, because there's a lot of reason to do that.
TalisIFA.com 01233 722 999. Ask for Simon.
Fantastic, Simon. Absolutely brilliant, as always. Thank you so much for that.
My absolute pleasure.
And it's a pleasure to see you. I know you've got to dash off at some point, but thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me.
Simon Webster, Talis IFA. We've got a couple of minutes before we join the newsroom. I've had a tweet from Matthew Dorrington. Sorry I can't tune in today. We'll listen to the catch-up. Would love a shout-out. We've reopened our 1 month of free Google Ads management. To qualify, you simply have to be willing to spend £1,000 on ads and have a viable product or service people are searching for, and you will receive no fees from us. You can follow Matthew on the Twitter. His Twitter handle is Matt with a double T, Dorrington underscore. So thank you for that, Matt. Do keep your tweets coming. We've got loads of tweets. Loads of things to talk about. We've got another fantastic guest to talk to in the second half of the show. Have you got something?
I've got the one that you were talking about earlier with the middle-aged mums. I mean, it's a big field for us to run around as three middle-aged mums. We need volunteers.
Oh, I see.
Two, so we can have extra people on hand. But if people like middle-aged mums and want to chat, lots of smiley faces.
All right.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. That was my lack of understanding.
Well, it's good to know that we have more than... So we had three listeners.
Listeners, absolutely. Three listeners. Absolutely, yeah.
So that sector, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's three more than normal, eh, Paul?
It is, actually, yeah. Yes. Yeah, we're normally in minus numbers. Yeah. We're normally in a black hole.
far.
It's not true. Yeah.
Chips and Dinks have actually said, sorry, been a bit busy today. All right for Sam, Jules Hurkin away on holiday, whilst Vanilla Webb and Linda Cloak will be on air. Have a great show.
Absolutely. Nice.
They love it. They obviously, these people obviously like you. You've got fans. I
mean, obviously.
A fan.
Obviously. We have a fan club.
Yeah.
Right.
Super popular.
We're going to join the Channel Radio newsroom. When we come back, we've got another fantastic guest to talk to. But for the moment, here we go.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.